The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Journalists strike at four newspapers, Teamsters calling for a boycott of Molson Coors, and today on the show, the latest from the Communication Workers of America and the plight of immigrants in America. Welcome to the Tuesday, April 9th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with a longtime sponsor of America's Workforce, going back years, and that would be the Communication Workers of America, CWA-union.org. Mr. Frank Matthews will be joining us. Frank is the director of District 4, administrative director of District 4, which includes Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Michigan. And do check out their Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/CWAD4. And there's two things we're going to delve in to today. Number one, artificial intelligence. You may recall a conversation that I had last week with John Schlois. Now, John heads the News Guild, which is affiliated with the Communication Workers. And this all has to do with a coalition of unions, including NABIT, also aligned with the CWA, the Writers Guild East and West. They all penned a letter to Senate Majority Chuck Schumer urging Congress to ensure that they are protected by any legislation addressing artificial intelligence. A lot of unions, very, very concerned about this. This letter specifically urges Congress to protect journalists, film and TV writers, and creative workers from artificial intelligence by ensuring AI does not replace journalists and creative professionals or replicate work produced by these professionals without consent or, and this is so important, fair compensation, whether or not they own the copyrights to their work. And there's more on that as well. So that's one of the issues. The other is the Affordable Connectivity Program, better known as ACP. And right now, the CWA is urging Congress to continue to support the bipartisan ACP Extension Act. Now, let me read this to you. We all know that the internet today is a necessity, and this crucial benefit helps working families stay connected to school, telehealth, and jobs. Within weeks, families will start to receive notices that they will lose access to ACP unless Congress acts now to pass legislation introduced in Congress by both Republicans and Democrats to keep the program funded. Now, what this essentially does, it helps nearly 23 million households access to high-speed broadband, providing $30 per month to qualifying families for affordable internet access. This means more families online, more jobs for CWA members. And there's a website you can go to help out in this cause, CWA-org/renew ACP. Okay? CWA.org/renew ACP. And that's something that, I tell you, Frank has been on this issue for years, and it's so important. We make the connection going back to, what, the 20s and 30s when, you know, telephones were out. If you didn't have a telephone, you were out of luck. Well, the same thing happens today with the internet. Stephen Volk will be joining us later in the show. He is Professor Emeritus, which means he is retired from Oberlin College, where he worked many, many years in the Department of History. And last week, On one website, and I think it got picked up by various newspapers on Cleveland.com, he penned a commentary, "Don't vilify immigrant workers, honor them." As he writes, at the March 28th home opener of the Baltimore Orioles, fans thunderously cheered the three first responders who scrambled to shut down traffic on the Francis Scott Key Bridge moments before a massive container ship slammed into it. Such recognition was well deserved. But what of the six workers who were hurled into the dark waters when the ship brought the bridge crashing down? How do we honor their sacrifice? Professor Volk points out all six were immigrants, hailing from Mexico, Central America. They were fathers and sons, disciplined workers who showed up to earn their daily bread. We don't know how long all of them lived and worked in America, Major Garrett of CBS News reported, nor do we know how they came to the country. But here's what we do know. Their work was, on the very best days, backbreaking and perilous. They were, by all accounts, the salt of the earth. So why are we demonizing immigrants in America? And then you hear the controversy. Well, they're illegal. Well, even the legal ones are demonized. And we're going to talk about that with Professor Volk as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, offering fixed income, real estate, and equity investment options to clients from coast to coast. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. Journalists represented by the News Guild went on strike yesterday at four newspapers: the Austin American Statesman, the Long Beach Post, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle. Now, both the Austin American Statesman and the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle are owned by Gannett, who faced strikes from two dozen unions last year. Now, these strikes are both unfair labor practice strikes based on what the union is calling Gannett's failure to bargain. The Long Beach Post has been striking over layoffs since late March, and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette strike now 18 months and not going anywhere. We talked about that last week with John Schlois. That was Tuesday's show, awfpodcast.com, a little plug there. Meanwhile, on Friday, almost 4,000 non-tenure track faculty at Harvard's Faculty of Arts and Sciences, Harvard's Medical School, and Harvard Divinity School all voted to join the Harvard Academic Workers Union organized through the UAW. Now, this comes on the heels of last Wednesday's union win for the roughly 100 members of Harvard Law School's clinical faculty. Now, both elections saw upwards of 93% of votes cast in favor of the union. By the way, this is just the latest in the UAW's recent academic worker union election wins in the region, as 1,300 workers at the universities of Vermont, New Hampshire, and Worcester Polytechnic Institute all voted to join in the past 2 weeks. Hats off to the UAW. Yeah, I know they're trying to organize the non-union plants in the South, but they are doing a bang-up job at a number of colleges and universities. The International Brotherhood of Teamsters is calling for consumers to boycott beverage company Molson Coors, which owns Coors Light, Miller Lite, and other alcoholic beverage brands. The Teamsters represent over 400 workers at the Molson Coors Texas Brewery negotiating for a new contract. We did a show on this a couple of months ago, and it was really tough, those negotiations, and obviously that's why they're calling for a boycott. The workers struck on February 17th when Coors offered a 99 cents per hour wage increase, not even a dollar. Last week, the Teamsters returned to the bargaining table, but Molson Coors increased its offer by only 5 cents an hour. Teamsters responded to the meager increase by calling for the consumer boycott of the company's products, which include, again, Miller Lite, Coors Light, Yingling, let's see, Topo Chico Seltzer, that's new to me, and here's a big one, Blue Moon. We had a jobs report that came out on Friday from the Department of Labor for the month of March showing higher job growth than analysts anticipated. How about that? They figured about 214,000 jobs would be created. Nope, it was 303,000. And the government also revised its estimate of job growth in January and February upward by a combined number of 22,000. President Biden noted that this report meant the administration had created more than 15 million jobs since he took office. And the unemployment rate, also good, dropping slightly to 3.8%. According to economist Steve Rattner, the United States has now had 26 consecutive months, more than 2 years, of unemployment under 4%, which, by the way, is the longest stretch of unemployment that low since the late 1960s. That is a long time. And while we're talking about jobs, we got a, and this is posted on the Alliance for American Manufacturing, one of our partners here on the show, Scott Paul of the Alliance, noted there was zero growth in manufacturing last month. And he said U.S. factories have gained only 24,000 jobs over the past year, with high trade deficits and interest rates preventing the expansion that industrial policy could further unlock. And this is what Scott said. While the economy continues to generate a sizable number of jobs, you just heard that number, 15 million, few of them have been added in factories over the last year. The flat manufacturing jobs number for March reflects that. He goes on to say, I believe there is a ceiling on factory job growth as long as interest rates remain so high, the dollar remains so strong, and the goods trade deficit stays so persistent. He points out that private companies have announced more than $688 billion in U.S. manufacturing investments since Biden took office. However, the U.S. goods trade deficit rose by $1 billion in February, and that's not good. AmericanManufacturing.org for more on that. All right, quick break. Frank Matthews on behalf of the Communication Workers of America coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craftworkers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Melissa Cropper will be joining us 1 week from today. Right now, though, let's go to line number one and welcome back to the show, longtime sponsor. That would be Frank Matthews on behalf of the Communication Workers of America, CWA-Union.org. And before we get to Frank, I got to do a shout out to District 3, which is in Berea, Kentucky, where student workers at Berea College are forming a union with the Communication Workers of America. That would be the United Student Workers of Berea, CWA, which represent more than 1,300 undergraduate students and would be the second union in higher education to represent the entire undergraduate population after Grinnell College. Now, Berea College is a work college and requires all students, all of them, to work on campus. The Student Workers Union has already demonstrated majority support and petitioned the National Labor Relations Board for a democratic union election. Key word there, democratic. Union elections are democratic. All right, let's go to our live line and join Frank Matthews. And Frank and I were talking off the air here. Yesterday was monumental day. Obviously, this has nothing to do with what unions are doing, but everything to do with what people were doing yesterday, looking up in the sky, checking out that total eclipse, which covered a big stretch of America. Frank, where were you when you watched that yesterday?
I was with my wife and my granddaughter, and she's nine. And I think, we were pretty excited about it. But when it happened, I think she was, it was just cool being there with her, and seeing her reaction. And like we talked, it lived up to the hype. I don't think she quite got when I made the comment that, I think I'll miss the next one. But anyway, it was pretty special, really.
It was real special. Yeah, we went over to, I have four daughters, and we chose one that was closest to home. And we were just amazed. And then, it was crazy. When it got dark, the deer came out, and then the dog started barking. It was kind of eerie at one point, but it didn't last very long. Yeah, and then it got cooler. That was so bizarre. But what a phenomenon to experience. That was something. Right. Anyway, let's move on here because I want to talk about artificial intelligence. And we talked about this last week on the show, and this is in connection with the letter that went to Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on behalf of two affiliates of the CWA, the News Guild and NABIT. And I know all unions are very much concerned about this. I'd like to get your take because we have to prepare for this because a lot of jobs, we've been hearing many jobs are going to disappear. And with the journalist part, John Schloss really nailed it because, there's some newspapers out there that are using artificial intelligence, writing stuff that doesn't even make any sense, and they're publishing it. So
yep.
I'd like to get your take on this. Go ahead, Frank.
Well, it is scary. I mean, our national president, Claude Cummings, saw the insight, and we have an actual IE committee made up of members from across the country to kind of address some issues on this. The scariest thing is, you mentioned the writing articles, what about the protecting things, safeguarding working talent, your professional voice. I mean, you talk into a computer or into a electronic piece of equipment for 20 minutes flash, and I would say there's a piece of equipment out there somewhere that if then once I grasp your voice, I could type it and make your voice say anything, and it's not you, but people think it's you. That's right. Really scary. That did happen at the last election, you know, when people thought they were receiving calls from our President Joe Biden that, you know, one of the nefarious opposing parties put out. And it's exactly things like that that need protected and need taken care of. You know, you got your professional voice, your likeness. I mean, you can go online now and see videos, and they are so realistic that it's a live person. It's scary. And then we also need protection from a union standpoint when we bargain over such issues. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't trust corporate America enough that they aren't going to try to use this to reduce workers, to shortcut their way to a buck like they are so good at doing, and without, you know, with the stockholders and profit being their driving concern and not employees and people. So there's a lot of things that need addressed. And you know, like you said earlier, the letter went to Leader Schumer, and let's hope we get some of these issues addressed, because it's quite scary.
Frank, one of the components of that letter is codifying workers' rights to bargain collectively over AI policy in the workplace. To your knowledge, I mean, you speak on behalf of District 4 for the CWA. Is any of this happening right now? Because I know there's a lot of contracts that are up and that are, you know, being renegotiated here. What do you know about that right now?
I know it's being introduced in contracts with not having a direct correlation to NABIT and some of my brothers and sisters, like in the Writers Guild. I can't talk specifics, but I know it is so important that not only in their contracts, I believe you're going to see much of negotiations over the next couple years. When we do sit down at the table with companies, that AI will be addressed. It has to be. It's like the elephant in the room right now. And next to living wages and health care and benefits and retirement when you're at the table, we better be addressing this, because that equates to jobs, you know.
I know the AFL-CIO has embarked on a campaign, so I can only assume that they're going to try to get as many unions as possible. And, you know, some unions are going to be more affected than others on this. There's no question on that. But do you see this as, I don't know if this is going to end up, you know, this is going to be a politically charged year. Perhaps this may come up in some of the political campaigns that will be happening this year. What's your guess on that?
I think so. Besides addressing the AI issue, I think we're going to see ads and like I said, the folks that, you know, where the ends justify the means mentality, you're going to see political ads even that maybe sound like somebody else but aren't necessarily. It's just that scary, and I do think it's going to come up, because it does need addressed, and it is going to equate to jobs. Like you said, this affects every walk of life. I mean, they've got you know, these programs that you know, are going to be writing articles, they're going to be writing college papers, they're going to be, you know, they're we better get ahead of this, or we're going to turn around. I mean, I'm like you. I keep thinking back to and it's crazy. But you think back to the Jetsons, and I know that this is coming out of left field, but when we were kids watching the Jetsons, they had a computer as a teacher. And, you know, the kids would talk to her, and the teacher would, I mean, that is how scary AI can be, that, you know, when we're educating our kids, and when our kids are going to college, and our people are learning, what's to prevent somebody from coming in and just program a computer to be their teacher, and yeah. You lose all of that personal, you know, give and take, and the relationship there, and that's how scary AI, I think, is could go if in the wrong hands. So it's so important that we get ahead of this, and I have faith in the Biden administration to get ahead of it. We just got to get everybody else headed that direction.
Frank Matthews, on behalf of the Communication Workers of America, CWA-union.org. We'll continue with Frank, and we're going to talk about renewing the Affordable Connectivity Program next. Later in the show, the demonization of immigrants in America. We'll talk with a professor from Oberlin College. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA. org.
Are you an experienced mechanical insulator looking to take your career to the next level? Insulators Local 50 in Central Ohio has steady work for a number of years. Insulators Local 50 offers a total wage and benefits package that can't be beat. It's not just the competitive wages. Local 50 also provides medical, vision, and dental insurance with no paycheck deductions for you and your family. Don't miss out on the chance to secure your future. Join us at Insulators Local 50. Earn great pay and the best benefits. Visit insulators50.com/AWF50 to fill out the online form, and a Local 50 representative will call to begin the process. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-union.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, ulagency.org. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Frank Matthews on behalf of the Communication Workers of America. Okay, Frank, you and I have been talking about the importance of the Internet, and I mentioned what we talked about for many, many times on the show. There was a time in America where you needed a telephone, all right? Well, now we need the Internet. And a lot of people don't have access to the Internet. Why? Because it's so darn costly. Talk to me about the Affordable Connectivity Program. And I understand this helps well over 20 million households, but I understand it's also in jeopardy. Please fill in the details on this one. Frank, go ahead.
Yeah, we're scared that the funding's going to run out on it. It is so important. 23 million households took advantage of the Affordable Connectivity Program. And, I mean, a lot of companies and a lot of folks went to work on this. First and foremost, the Biden administration originally pulled in some 20 broadband providers and said, hey, we've got an idea of offering an affordable connectivity program to families that far below the poverty scale. What can you do? Well, these 20 companies came up with broadband packages that would fall in under whatever that the ACP funding provided. So, you had 23 million folks who now enjoyed broadband. And as we've talked before, this was really highlighted during COVID when families were having to drive to McDonald's to do their school work and setting their cars outside hotels where they could steal internet signal. It was crazy. So the Biden administration set out to address that, and that was addressed with the ACP, the Affordable Connectivity Program. And it's set to run out. Its funding is set to run out in May next month. And so a lot of folks are lobbying to get the ACP refunded. And so like we talked about, there was a big rally attended by FCC officials, politicians, a Congresswoman Yvette Clark out of New York, who with Brian Fitzpatrick, a Republican in Pennsylvania, so this is bipartisan, they have proposed that the Affordable Connectivity Program, it's called the Affordable Connectivity Program Extension Act of 2024, which if passed would fully fund this ACP really far down the road. And then, like you said, it means a lot to some 23 million people. This is an effort of our, we've talked about our broadband brigade at CWA. Each district has a handful, usually it's one for each state, a person on what we call our broadband brigade. And they're working on this. They've transitioned now that most of the states have set up their broadband programs that they're getting to roll out here within the next month or so. So it just seemed logical that our broadband brigade pivot over to this issue. It's really important. It's probably next to the infrastructure program that the Biden administration has rolled out when it comes to broadband and children and families being able to close that digital divide. This ACP program is probably second to none in importance, and we're just really, really anxious for our elected officials to do something, regarding that. Now, we have set up on our own website a place where people can go and actually sign their name, put their address to a petition, and this petition will actually go right to their member of Congress or their senator. And before we get done here, I'd like to give that web address, and that way we can try to just to let our elected officials know how important that is,
Yeah, Frank, I did mention this at the top of the show, that website, and let's get into it right now. This is pretty important here because this funding, it looks like it's going to end in a couple of weeks. End of April. So, yeah, there's not much time left on this. CWA.org/renewACP. CWA.org/renewACP. Okay, let me ask you. This is a bipartisan extension. So we've got Republicans and Democrats working together, which doesn't happen all that often. So what's the problem here? Is it I can't even believe. I know we always wait to the last minute to get these things done, but in your opinion, is there any hurdle here that needs to be jumped over to get this thing to the finish line?
We see none. Actually at the rally that they had, the FCC chairman was actually speaking on behalf of the program and how important it was that groups worked together and how important this ACP program was. So I don't see anything standing in the way other than philosophy and getting this thing introduced. But of course, you know, D.C. and particularly the House right now is kind of in gridlock, and you know the leadership there, you know, has struggled with getting bills passed and getting things put through Congress, unfortunately, we may be in that situation. I think this is such an important issue, and to your point, you know, a bipartisan issue that with the Republicans supporting it and introducing it in the House and enough Republicans supporting it that we can get it across the finish line. It's just, it's like anything else in D.C. right now. Sometimes it's everything's in the 11th hour and at the last minute, which is sad, but that's the reality of particularly the House right now. And it's just very crucial. And you know, the nice thing about that website that you shared is that if folks want to just go online and look at that, there's a QR code right next to the address. If you go to that page that you gave, there's a QR. Point your phone at that and take a picture of that QR code. It will automatically bring your phone screen up to that registration where you can input your name, your address, and that's virtually about it. And then it will automatically, like I said, send those emails to your elected officials. So we've made it about as easy to do this. And you know, I had a politician tell me one time that it's okay. It's one thing for you to want Washington to do things. You have to make Washington do things. You have to show them that this is important. And we all out here can really show our electeds, Republican and Democrats alike, just how important this is, you know, to sign on to.
Within weeks, families will start to receive notices that they will lose access to ACP, Affordable Connectivity, unless Congress acts now to pass this legislation introduced in Congress by both Republicans and Democrats to keep the program funded. The only thing I see on this, and I see on this page here, this will obviously create good jobs and continue to create good jobs for CWA members. And Frank, this is no surprise. You know, there's some anti-union. Well, not some. There's a lot of anti-union politicians out there, and they probably are figuring, oh, no, this is a perk for the union. We're not going to do anything on it. But we got to rise above that. You know that.
Yep. It's we got to get past that. This is about jobs. It's about closing the digital divide. You know, you think about it. Here you'll have 23 million households that for the last couple years have had access to web doctors, have had access to education from home. Now, boom, it's gone. You talk about it, the digital divide and the haves and the have-nots again in this country, and that's the living example of it. So, you know, we just got to show our electeds the importance of it, get this thing passed, and I thankfully there's folks out here like you and your show where we can you know, generate support for this and educate folks on how important this is.
Yeah, we got to push this to the finish line. And paint a picture here real quick. And you said this so many times on the show. During the pandemic, there were a lot of young people going outside of McDonald's just so they can get internet access to do their homework because they didn't have it at home. Why? Because they couldn't afford it. And right now, yep. 23 million people are in that category. They may lose it and end up back at McDonald's doing their homework. Crazy stuff. Yep. Let me give you that website again, cwa.org/renew ACP. Frank Matthews, you take care. Stay safe. We'll talk to you next month, okay, brother?
Take care, brother.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Stephen Volk, Professor Emeritus, that means he is retired from the Department of History at Oberlin College, penned a really interesting article on the demonization of immigrant workers in America. He will tell that story coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit BMWE.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you could find more at teamster.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number 2 right now, and joining us is Stephen Volk. Stephen is Professor Emeritus at Oberlin College in the History Department. He has since retired, but he's still very active, especially writing, and he put together what they call an op-ed piece, which was published on Cleveland.com recently, about immigrant workers. Don't vilify immigrant workers, honor them. And we should all know that immigrant workers do a lot of jobs that Americans just don't want to do. Stephen Volk, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today, because I think it's important that we're all human. We're all human, but a lot of people are not being treated that way. And I would imagine what happened in Baltimore is kind of what made you get in front of your computer and put this together. And I know you got a long history here of talking about situations like this. So why don't you tell us what you put together here for this article? It's all yours, Stephen. Go ahead.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I appreciate the time to talk about this because it seems so incredibly important at this time. So the immediate issue, of course, is that when the massive container ship hit the bridge in Baltimore, bringing it down, there were 6 workers on the bridge. This was in the middle of the night,
They were working away filling potholes on the street, and the bridge collapsed. Six of them fell into the water. Two bodies have been recovered, and four are still not have not been rescued, have not been recovered. They are presumed dead. And these, all we now know, were immigrant workers. They came from Mexico, from Honduras, and from El Salvador. We don't know exactly how long they had been in the country, how they came here, but they were immigrant workers, and they were doing the kind of work that immigrants often do in this country, the really hard work in construction, in meatpacking, in all sorts of other other occupations that U.S.-born, native-born workers no longer seem to want to occupy. And the irony of this, if one could call it irony, is that these are workers who are not just doing the jobs that we need to get done, the hard jobs, the really dangerous jobs, and research will show that the jobs they are taking are much more dangerous, and the injuries suffered by immigrant workers and the deaths to immigrant workers on the job are higher than those to native-born workers. They're not only doing these jobs, but they are, particularly by the Republican Party, being vilified for doing exactly that. And so it is, it's just, I would say, infuriating to see that in a country which depends on this kind of labor, which depends on this kind of labor to deliver us groceries when, you know, when COVID locked us inside, to staff our hospitals, to drive our buses, to tend our gardens, to take care of our kids, all of these things. And they are seen by the person I would call the criminal in chief as criminals themselves. And so I think it's this one incident which kind of encapsulates the moment is really important to think about.
We are a nation of immigrants. Let's start right there. But apparently it depends where you come from. So if you come from Europe, any parts, obviously people that are white, Caucasian, that seems to be okay. But if you're a different color, if you're brown, it doesn't work that way. Is that what's going on here today?
Well, it is, but it's also a part of a longer tradition. We are facing irony upon irony because, of course, the United States is, except for its Native American population, all immigrants. And yet each wave of immigration that came over, particularly from the late 19th century on to the present time, has been vilified, has been dismissed and disregarded, whether you're talking about Chinese workers who helped build the railroads, whether you're talking about Hispanic workers who helped get our agriculture going, all of these things. Each generation, Jews, Italians, Irish, Chinese, Japanese, have been vilified until they are accepted into the population. Some are Italians, Irish, who make up a lot of the police forces, particularly in the East Coast. But the newer comers and those who are not white generally do not get that same kind of welcome. And so we are seeing with Hispanic-born workers from Latin America in particular, that they are a very handy target. They have always been, immigrants have always been a handy target for xenophobic forces within the U.S. political system. And now with Trump, who is absolutely unafraid and unabashed and unhinged in terms of his attacks on them, calling immigrants, saying that they poison our blood, that they are criminals, that they are special kinds of criminals. These are things that many people have pointed out. I have too in writing. They come right out of a Nazi playbook. They are clearly intended to not just discriminate against these people, but make them subjects of violence.
And as far as doing that, You're laying it right out here. I mean, this is part of the division in America. And apparently that works. When you can, I guess, target a certain population and kind of like energize the base in America that believe in that, you can sway an election, can't you?
You can. And one of the things that I find so disturbing about this is, of course, you know, I don't have to tell your audience that over the last 10 or 15 years that white workers in particular have moved away from the Democratic Party and have become subject to sort of prey of this kind of rhetoric that claims that immigrants are taking their jobs, that immigrants are creating crime in the country, that immigrants are driving the economy down, all of these things. And none of them are actually true. So, for example, everyone knows that the last 2 years have seen a very high level of immigration at the border, right, of people coming in. Now, I want to make one point fairly clear here. They're often called illegal immigrants. The vast, vast majority of people who come through the border come legally in the sense that they are making use of our asylum procedures. That is a legal way to enter the country. Then they have to go through hearings and whatnot to determine whether they could stay, but they have come through a legal mechanism. Okay, we've seen an increase in the last 2 years. The unemployment rate for U.S. workers in last year was the lowest rate on record. In other words, when the immigration is highest, unemployment for U.S.-born workers has been lowest, so they're not taking U.S. jobs. There's also all sorts of economic policies that says that without immigrants, our economy in 10 years will be $7 trillion less than with immigrants coming in. And a new report also shows that immigrants are responsible for the U.S. being able to get out of the COVID dump, out of the COVID trench that we fell into, faster than any other country in the world because of immigrants. So the argument that they are used to turn white workers against Democratic policies are just crazy, because it's the one thing that is saving our economy at the moment.
Well, you probably know this by now. You're very educated. I mean, at Oberlin College, very, very distinguished college, not just in America, but in the world. Facts don't seem to matter anymore, do they?
They don't. They don't, because cultural policies and cultural sort of hot topics, and Trump decided when he first came down on his golden escalator that immigrants would be the bridge that he would walk over towards his own political success. So when you turn a population away from its own actual interests and say your interests are not being served, this is a long term. This has gone on in the United States for most of its history, that turning black workers against white workers, turning white workers against immigrant workers, against Hispanic workers. This, it has a long history behind it, and Trump knows unabashedly and unashamedly how to turn that to his advantage. And I think that, you know, brave workers, United Auto Workers is a good example of that, understands exactly how bankrupt that kind of policy is, and it's coming out much more strongly in favor of working class policies that Democrats support.
Yeah, it may be a bankrupt policy, but it seems to garner votes, and that's all that matters.
Absolutely. I think that's the key issue for now, and a key issue that people have to keep their attention focused on.
Stephen Volk, Professor Emeritus at Oberlin College Department of History. Professor, thank you so much for sharing your views. You stay in touch and stay safe, okay?
Thank you so much for having me, and the same to you and all your listeners.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Adam Keller of the Valley Labor Report and Insulators Local 69. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.